This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Yep, we made it. It is Friday. So we've got a look at the economic week that was and a trip to a record store in Nashville. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Baltimore, I'm Amy Scott, in for Kai Rizdahl. It's Friday, I may have mentioned, the 17th of December. Good, as always, to have you with us. There was a lot this week in the economy, the Fed, the virus. So we're going to get right to it with Lynette Lopez at Business Insider. Sadeep Reddy is at Politico. Hey, you two.
Hey, Amy.
Hi, how's it going?
Pretty well, considering. Let's start, though, with the big Fed news of the week, Sadeep. The Fed has been kind of setting the table for this for a long time. But now we know three interest rate hikes penciled in for next year. What changed for Jay Powell and the FOMC?
Well, it's been a 21-month period of keeping the foot on the accelerator, trying to get through the worst of the pandemic. And for Jay Powell, he kind of was shaken by the realization that the inflation that he's been claiming is transitory may not actually be all that transitory. And that's not a position mm-hmm. you want to be in. Fed officials have spent decades trying to make sure they don't make the mistakes of the 1970s. We're not there yet. But there are a lot of concerns that this could, we're not far from having this inflationary get more entrenched and people start worrying about it in a deeper way. It's obviously gotten consumers down in all sorts of ways. And there's just really no reason when unemployment is so low, home prices are surging, product price, all sorts of things. Why is the Fed still buying all these bonds? That's the really, really the question. And so they've accelerated their tapering program. They're going to pull back on that. And we might be seeing some rate hikes next year. But guess what? The world didn't end.
Lynette, you know, there's Fed policy, but there's also what the bond market does. And that really determines the longer term interest rates that a lot of consumers pay. What are you hearing from people you talk to in the bond market?
You know, I think people are ready to go into next year with just generally lower expectations for what's going to happen. We see a wide variety in the bond market of like you have anything from doom and gloom people on Wall Street saying that inflation is going to be lower, we're going to go right back to where we started, to people who think the Fed is completely out of control. Like nobody knows, okay? Nobody knows. Mm-hmm. 2022 is a black box. Omicron came, changed the game. The Fed says it's data dependent, so nothing that the Fed just did over the last week was particularly shocking. That's why you saw stocks rally and the market in general just took that calmly. But if somebody tells you that they know what's going to happen in 2022, they are lying. Okay. No.
So maybe not low expectations, just no expectations.
Oh, you know, people have their own opinions, but it's just such a wide variety of things that could happen that I don't think anybody is really prepared. I just don't.
Okay, so Sadeep, if we do start to see interest rates rise, you know, maybe the Fed starts in March, how quickly do you see inflation responding?
So this is one of the great mysteries of the moment. The Fed can usually intervene in a normal economic cycle, cool things down, get prices, suppress demand a little bit, get prices to cool off. This is not a normal economic cycle. This is supercharged in all sorts of wild, crazy ways. And what we're seeing with inflation is so much of it is driven by these wacky supply chains, so much of it is driven by COVID disruptions. And who would have thought that from 8 months ago, when just about anybody could have gotten vaccinated, to now, that we will have gone through two variants that create all sorts of havoc on not only human lives, but also on supply chains. And we'll be going into this period next year where we don't really know, as Lynette says, we don't really know how we're going to come out of this in a normal way. And so the Fed doesn't really know how they're going to be able to go forward. But what the Fed's done is put all options on the table now to try to deal with it. And we all just have to hope that the Fed is not going to be in a position where it just has to force a recession and trigger a recession to be able to avoid a doom loop spiral in inflation, because we're not there yet, but that's certainly among the more pessimistic scenarios out there.
So let's talk about the other side of that dual mandate of the Feds. You talked about the job market being pretty strong, but the BLS is out with some data showing some real differences state by state. You know, for example, in Nebraska, unemployment is 1.9%. California is at 6.9%. Lynette, you know, what about that variability, and is there wiggle room still in the employment numbers?
There's a lot of wiggle room in the employment numbers, but I don't know how we're going to fix any of that until the pandemic is over. There will still be people who need to take care of their kids because school is not in session, or their kids could be sent home any day. There will still be people who are afraid because they have some kind of comorbidity or something, afraid to go back to work. I mean, there's so much noise in this economy, and it's really impossible to know how to fix those things until you fix the pandemic. And New York City right now is going through a particularly difficult time with our surge. We thought we had everything under control. We thought life was getting back to normal. And this weekend we have restaurants closing and all sorts of institutions closing because of the pandemic. Until you figure out the virus, you do not figure out the economy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm noting a kind of a low mood here in this
There's a lot of questions, not a lot of answers. So I feel bad that every time you ask a question, the answer is, I don't know. But I don't know. Chairman Powell doesn't know. And it's quite possible that Jesus Christ doesn't know.
Well, and the president doesn't know either. Today, the Biden administration issued a really stark warning to the unvaccinated. I don't think we've heard, you know, this kind of language. Basically, you're in for a winter of serious illness and death. But if people aren't already scared enough to get vaccinated, is that going to work, Sudeep?
Amy, there's it almost seems like there's nothing else the Biden folks can do. They can get the people who are double vaccinated to get the booster. They can make policy changes to deal with some of the testing shortfalls. But some people are not going to want to get vaccinated. And we can just hope that in the coming months, we'll have COVID pills out that can deal with some of the worst ramifications of this. But it is, President Biden and everyone else are right, it is going to be a brutal couple of months for people who are not vaccinated. And I just cannot even imagine what we're going to be seeing in 2 months for all those people who have just held out until this point. It's going to be ugly. But for everyone else, hopefully we will get out of it okay. And we'll get to a brighter 2022, but it's going to be dark in the beginning.
All right. Sudeep Reddy is at Politico, Lynette Lopez at Business Insider. Thanks to both of you, and please try to have a good weekend.
Thanks, Amy. Definitely. Take care.
Don't even worry about me. I'm good.
All right. On Wall Street today, volatility. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. As we just talked about in the wrap, the Omicron variant is putting a lot of people and businesses on edge. In the past few days, Broadway shows have closed, fast food chains have suspended indoor dining, universities have shut down campuses. Navigating how to keep operating in the ever-changing pandemic landscape is tricky. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab checked in with some business owners to see how they're making decisions.
John McNulty knew it was bound to happen, and last week, it happened. One of my employees said he had been exposed.
Exposed to COVID. So McNulty, who owns a bar in Brooklyn called Thief, told the employee to stay home and get tested. The test came back positive, and there ended up being multiple cases among his staff, all mild. The bar closed for 2 days and lost $10,000.
It's a bit scary.
All of McNulty's employees are vaccinated. You have to be to work in a bar or restaurant in New York City. But now he's considering mandating boosters. He also wants to start testing workers weekly if he can get his hands on enough rapid kits.
I mean, we check vaccinations. I feel like we do everything we can do. I masked up my staff.
Nearly 2 years into the pandemic with an aggressive new variant, there's little new guidance for businesses on COVID protocols. Peter Capelli is a professor of management at Wharton.
Because we don't know for sure what the risk is. We don't know for sure what the standard practices should be.
There's also little financial safety net for businesses that close compared to last year's federal grants that helped keep businesses afloat. Capelli says fear of closure can deter owners from testing employees.
Frankly, I think not every employer wants to know, to be honest.
And the holidays are important. Patrick Corcoran at the National Association of Theater Owners says movies this time of year usually bring in as much revenue as the whole summer season. Bigger chains can absorb the blow.
Smaller companies can be a little more nimble, but at the same time, they don't have quite the same kind of access to capital.
He says as of now, movie theaters are pulling in 40% of what they did in 2019. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Families have some tough decisions to make, too, and that means many will be ringing in the holidays with a new tradition. Before the eggnog and presents, how about a nice swab up the nose? Rapid antigen tests for COVID-19, the ones you can buy at a drugstore and take home, are less sensitive than the gold standard PCR tests you get at a clinic. But they're faster and more convenient, and they turn positive when people are most likely to be infectious. Important information for families gathering to celebrate the holidays. But getting your hands on those tests? Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has that one.
Justin Noggle in Kansas City just added a new item to his Christmas shopping list. Because he and his girlfriend will be seeing unvaccinated kids and older relatives, they want to take rapid tests.
Our plan is to, after learning that there might be a run on tests, is to go out early Saturday morning.
These tests were regularly sold out in store and online a couple months ago. But supplies have improved recently, says Lindsay Dawson at the Kaiser Family Foundation, though they can still be tricky to track down when demand surges like it has now.
It's not a great indicator when a store says a test is available in a particular zip code at a particular store for that test actually being there.
And then there's the cost. Dawson says prices range from about $7 to $30 per test. A Biden administration plan to make insurance companies reimburse consumers won't kick in until next year and will only help about half of Americans who have private insurance.
We continue to neglect testing as a public health tool that is essential. To just leave testing up to the whim of free market.
Michael Mina is a former Harvard epidemiologist, now with digital health platform eMed. He says without federal investment, the few companies approved to make the tests can't produce at scale. Some local governments are filling the gap. In Colorado, residents can order up to 8 free tests a week, says Sarah Hama with the State Department of Public Health.
It's super quick and easy. You fill out a quick form, and then our distributing partner will distribute that product directly to people's homes.
She says the state has spent about $10 million on tests. Research by Michael Mina suggested every dollar spent on rapid testing saves money in the long term. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
We heard earlier about how the Omicron variant has thrown yet another wrench into many a business plan. That's on top of the supply chain issues we're all familiar with by now. You've got shipping delays and gridlock at the ports. Just ask Janann Monroe. She's CEO of a sporting goods business in Boulder, Colorado.
We manufacture our own soccer goals in China. We partner with two factories over there, and we do pop-up goals, which are the dome-shaped goals that you see on all the AYSO fields. The supply chain problems have affected our business by drastically reducing our profit. Since about 2019, the import and duties drastically raised with that legislation. So that was kind of the first turn that hit us pretty hard. And then with COVID and the container shortages, stuff really started to get expensive, where it used to be maybe $500 for us to reserve a container to ship over. Now it's about $12,000. So it gets to the point where you kind of wonder, is it worth it? What are we really doing this for? Our last container, there was a trucking accident, and our product was stuck in that port for a week, and we had to pay the 7 days that our stuff was stuck there. So that was just an added $4,000 expense to us, and it was out of our hands. We're now going on 2 years of it being pretty challenging, and the company has made it through a previous recession, so we know we can do it, but it definitely takes the fun out of things when it's so challenging just to get a product over and to sell it and to make any amount of money. You almost have to laugh about it, because if not, you will cry about it. So we just have to get a little bit more creative and roll up the sleeves and just dig in.
That story comes to us from the Marketplace podcast, Make Me Smart. Coming up.
It's just like being at your best friend's house looking through records.
Sounds like a perfect afternoon. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 532 points, almost 1.5%, to close at 35,365. The NASDAQ shed 10 points, less than a tenth percent, to end at 15,169. And the S&P 500 shed 48 points, 1%, to finish at 4620. For the week, the Dow lost 1.6%. The S&P 500 was off 1.9%. The NASDAQ dropped 2.9%. Yesterday, the CDC focused on vaccines and recommended Moderna and Pfizer's COVID vaccines over rival Johnson & Johnson's. J&J gave back 2.7%. Moderna shot up 4.5%. Pfizer dipped 2.8%. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 1.40%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Amy Scott. We all know some of the companies that have profited from the disruptions caused by the pandemic. Amazon, Zoom, flour mills, at least back when so many of us started baking to keep our sanity. Here's another industry that's been booming, private equity. The investment firms that buy big companies, often with lots of debt, revamp them, and then try to sell them off at a big profit. Private equity firms are on pace to invest a record $1 trillion in U.S. companies this year, according to an industry trade group. Marketplace's Matt Levin looked into what that could mean for you and me.
Maybe you can't name a specific private equity firm, but you may know some of the companies they own pretty intimately.
Many people may be familiar with the company called Spanx.
That's Drew Maloney, who heads the private equity trade association called the American Investment Council. The grocery chain Albertsons and the dating app Bumble are also owned by private equity firms. And where do those firms get the money to buy these companies?
The investors are largely pension funds across America, endowments, college endowments, private endowments.
The biggest private equity players, like the Blackstone Group, combine that investor money with lots of debt, which the company they buy is expected to pay back. And that's partly why private equity is thriving right now, says Borju Esmer at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School.
It is mostly because the interest rates have been low.
Debt is cheap. And meanwhile, because of the pandemic,
potential candidates to be bought. I mean, when you think about companies, if it's family-owned businesses, these are the baby boomers and they are retiring.
This all sounds very familiar to Eileen Applebaum, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research and a longtime industry critic. The years before the Great Recession were also a private equity heyday. Firms gobbled up major retailers like Toys R Us and loaded them with debt.
They all made money out of owning Toys R Us. It's just the workers, the communities, the lenders. Those are the people who lost.
Toys R Us ended up going bankrupt, but Applebaum says the private equity firms that bought it still charged their investors hefty fees. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
I know a businessman here in Baltimore who has sort of a mantra for entrepreneurs just starting out. Buy the bricks. As in, why pay rent to a landlord when you can own the building and have a lot more control and stability while building equity? In today's real estate market, though, owning the bricks can be a real stretch. That's the case for a record store in East Nashville, Tennessee, trying to buy its own building or risk losing it all to developers. From WPLN, Paige Flager reports.
The Groove is a small record shop nestled into a 1920s craftsman-style house on the city's east side.
The whole personality of the house is having the old creaky door so that we know when people come in.
Inside, racks of records line the walls, which are plastered in band posters and black and white photos from punk shows. Owner Jesse Cartwright straightens a few albums perched above the fireplace.
It's just like being at your best friend's house looking through records.
Beyond being homey, the Groove has built a reputation for being a community space. They throw concerts with bands, often before they get big, like Alabama Shakes and the singer Yola. In the fall, they host scary movie nights on a projector in the backyard. But the Groove is in jeopardy. Their landlord is selling the property. Fortunately, part of their lease agreement gives the Groove an opportunity to buy it before it hits Nashville's competitive real estate market. Unfortunately, the price tag is nearly $500,000.
People say, oh, it is a good price point for Nashville. And I agree, but for a small business, it is a lot.
Cartwright's husband and co-owner of The Groove, Michael Combs, jumps in.
We don't have $500,000 just lying around in the bank. I mean, I wish we did, but we don't.
Combs says they need to raise the funds by the end of January. And this massive expense comes at a tenuous time for the business. On one hand, vinyl is more popular than ever before. Sales have skyrocketed. But
the supply chain is rocky right now, and they're having trouble actually sourcing vinyl. So that also causes prices to go up.
In turn, profit margins are down. Plus, indie record shops like theirs aren't the only ones getting in on the action.
There's a lot more competition because stores that never gave a who about vinyl, like Target and Best Buy and Amazon, there's no CDs anymore, but they have vinyl sections. They didn't care because they just see a way for them to make money.
These factors make the building's price tag feel even more unattainable. And what's happening to the Groove is becoming a familiar tale in Nashville, especially among independent music-related businesses. For example, beloved independent music venue Exit Inn made a similar bid to gain ownership of their space through crowdfunding earlier this year. Despite their efforts, the building was sold to a developer. Luckily, the developer says it has no plans to knock it down. So it's business as usual for the Rock Club. But standing outside the Groove, Jesse Cartwright fears their building wouldn't be so lucky.
If we don't purchase it as soon as it's purchased, I'm sure it will be bulldozed.
All around Nashville, small old houses like this one are being bought up and torn down. Sometimes multiple modular-looking houses or mixed-use buildings are squeezed onto one lot. He says that type of cookie-cutter development doesn't match up with Nashville's culture.
We can have progress. We can be a hot city without destroying everything that makes Music City, Music City.
Nashville is growing fast, and Cartwright hopes that businesses like his won't be left behind. In Nashville, I'm Paige Flager for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out, we told you a couple weeks ago about the cream cheese shortage. That means less cheesecake this holiday season. In a gimmick, I guess, designed to console frustrated customers, Kraft, maker of Philadelphia cream cheese, is offering thousands of people $20 a piece to buy alternative desserts. 10,000 spots filled quickly today, another 8,000 open up tomorrow. The larger shortage is partly due to cybercrime. A Kraft cream cheese competitor, Schreiber Foods in Wisconsin, had to close for several days due to a ransomware attack. I guess nothing's sacred. All right, time to start your weekend if you haven't already, but not without your moment of economic context. We tend to talk in national terms about the economy, but this item from Bloomberg is another reminder that not all job markets are created equal. The New York Fed is out with new data today showing that some of the biggest cities, including New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, have further to go to fully recover to pre-pandemic employment levels. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fergali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. I'm Amy Scott. We'll see you Monday. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.